Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is my friend Maureen Armand, who, if you listen to my Dallas's podcast, Maureen was nice enough to call up and wish me well. So, Maureen, we're here to talk about the Qatari Peace Conference. And it's going to be about the environment. It's going to be called Defying Extinction. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what it's about and who will be speaking?
Cynthia, thank you for the opportunity to talk about the conference. This is the 21st annual Qatari Peace Conference. And normally we bring in speakers from, sometimes from all over the world, actually, speakers from, you know, different places in this country, plus local activists and scholars, to talk about issues related to war and peace. But this year we decided to turn the attention to climate disruption, the climate crisis, because it's so imperative that we, as citizens, really work with our leaders to address what is becoming increasingly a dire situation for our future planetarily, for the species' future. Even though that sounds so extreme, that's the tone that climate scientists are speaking in. So we decided to take a look at that. There's a couple of reasons why that's a totally connected issue, that climate is a totally connected issue to the issue of war and peace. I found this startling, and I only realized this in doing some research for the conference in the last couple of weeks, that one of the things that people who analyze the question of whether or not human beings have affected, universally affected, Earth's climate, I guess, is the result of Earth's basic makeup, is that they detect nuclear fallout, radiation fallout in everything that's living on the planet. They find it everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's universal. And so that's one point of agreement among climatologists who are debating, you know, the extent of human cause for the dramatic climate change that we're seeing. So, I mean, that in itself is startling, and it certainly issues an imperative beyond imperative for us to change our policy in terms of nuclear weapons and weapons of war in general. The second reason is that the military, U.S. military, is the greatest institutional user of fossil fuel on the planet, and therefore one of the greatest, if not the greatest, polluter and cause of pollution, not only in its own operation, but also in the devastation that creates environmental degradation when wars are waged. Ironically, the third reason why it's a good match for the Qatari Peace Conference, this question, is that we wage our modern wars for control, hegemony over fossil fuels planetarily. We want to be in control of those precious resources. And then finally, the military itself is among the leaders in their scientists forecasting the absolutely dire, catastrophic, world-changing, transformative, they use these words, effect of climate change. They are both working for mitigation for their own interests, but also projecting that the wars to come will be the result of climate change because of the great disruption it's going to bring. So this is why there's such an imperative and why it's a good connection to the Qatari Peace Conference. So thank you for letting me say all of that. The conference has kind of developed a schedule over the last few years of a two-day event. And because every year we're really looking at issues that are sometimes just hard to digest, hard to take in, hard not to become really despairing over, I guess, we started to add a full day on Fridays. So this Friday, August 16th, there's kind of a non-traditional conference format, more of a retreat, more of an opportunity for people to reflect together in a beautiful physical environment. We hold this conference at the International Shrine of Qatari Tekakwitha in Fonda, New York, because it really is a beautiful inside-outside place that feeds reflection. So we have this day of reflection. And this year, with this topic so pressing, so difficult to really absorb because it's so threatening for all of us and for our progeny, that we are using the proximity of the conference site to the village of Kanawaga, which was a Mohawk village in the 1600s, that because of the effects of European contact, because there was the French missionaries, moved a lot of people to Catholicism. Illness devastated the Mohawk community, illnesses that they had no defense against when the Europeans came. The economic changes that were drastically happening because of different kinds of trading policies, et cetera, this village was abandoned, and it is the most studied archaeologically Haudenosaunee Iroquois village in the state. And so it sits there, and the markings from the archaeology make clear where the longhouses were, and the environment makes clear why people would want to live there. So we're going to use the proximity to that site in our reflections as we think about how we've gotten to this point of climate disruption, because we perhaps lost the wisdom of the native peoples who saw themselves so totally connected to the web of life. So we're going to use that as a basis for reflection, and also to think about what do people do as a community when they're faced with absolutely overwhelming forces that are kind of beyond their control or come from geopolitical choices that seem so much bigger than any one of our pay scales. So how do we as a community react to the coming climate change? And we're going to be doing that with some interesting people. Our keynote speaker for the conference, both Friday and Saturday, is a man by the name of Dar Jamal. Some people in the area would remember Dar Jamal. He was an independent journalist who decided to go to Iraq in the early days of the war in Iraq because he was living in Alaska, and as he read about the war, he couldn't quite understand all of the dynamics, and felt that it was so important that the story be told of what was really happening that he became credentialed and he went. And he experienced and wrote about some very, very dramatic situations and got to feel the pain of this war intimately. And it wrote a couple of books about that and spoke quite a bit. Ultimately, he went back to his passion, which was mountain climbing, once he, left that arena. And he climbed often in Alaska, and he began to realize that there was a profound change happening to the ice, to the glaciers, to the terrain in Alaska. And as he became more and more involved with this, he began to do more and more research and to write about this. Kind of planetary-wide. He studied all of the reports that have been coming out over the last decade and wrote often especially for Truth Out, which is an online journal. Then he decided to do a book, and what he did with the book was he traveled to what are seen as the hot spots of climate change, where very dramatically it's clear coral reefs are dying, the glaciers are melting, the forests are becoming degraded. It goes on and on and on, and he traveled to a number of places in the planet where this was quite evident, spoke to researchers and scientists and observers in those areas, and has written a very powerful book about what he's seen, the title of which is The End of Ice, Bearing Witness and Finding Meaning in the Path of Climate Disruption. So Dar Jamal is kind of the keynote speaker, but on Friday, he's going to reflect on his own personal pain and sorrow and processing of the realities that he's been confronting so powerfully and help us do that. And he's going to be joined by a Native American spiritual guide. Her name is Terry Delahanty. Her native name is Many Feathers. She is a Cree and a Ojibwa background, woman, and she's from Connecticut and has been leading people as a spiritual guide, connecting people to the ancient vision of the web of life and our integral connection to it. And so she'll be working with Dar to help us think about the traditions of the peoples who lived where we are meeting, and how they perhaps can provide a guide for how we need to move forward. We also are going to be joined on Friday as well as Saturday by a poet by the name of Melissa Tookie. Melissa is what she calls, she uses the term an eco-feminist and a social activist. And increasingly, her work has both collated and been about the environment and our core ecology and how we need to see ourselves within that ecology and how we're suffering when we don't find our place within it. Her most recent book is an anthology that's just incredible. It's powerful. It brings together the works of so many poets, including our own Dan Wilcox, who's included in the anthology. It's titled Ghost Fishing. And ghost fishing actually refers to these masses of pollution material, plastic material, that, you know, are basically showing up all over the oceans, which also, as Dar points out in his book, are so totally compromised already. So Melissa will be reading from her poetry in a workshop called The Reading to Feed Consciousness, Heart, Resistance, Resilience. And she will also be conducting a poetry writing workshop, the point of which is perhaps in the voice of poetry we can speak our hearts and our pain and our angst about what's happening to our planet in a way that perhaps in a normal everyday conversation we can't. So the day will end on Friday with a walk through the woods to the village of Kanawaga. Together, we're going to be joined also on both Friday and Saturday by Eric Marzak, who's a local Native American flautist. He not only studies, researches, makes, but plays the flute. And again, because we're talking about something that is haunting to the soul and to our vision of the future and also our hearts, that kind of reminder of that kind of almost spiritual music of our native ancestors who were so endemic to that place will help us, I think, process in a perhaps non-intellectual but heart way. On Saturday, we have a more traditional schedule. I feel like I'm going on and on. May I talk about that? I hope I'm not.
Of course, go ahead.
Okay, good. I don't want to be denying you a chance to say anything. On Saturday, the heart of the conference in terms of the intellectual content, the title of, as you alluded to, the title of the conference is Defying Extinction, Nurturing a Garden of Resilience in the Face of Climate Crisis. So on Saturday, we will have Eric and Melissa with us to help set the tone. But Dar Jamal will be talking about the research that he's done and what he's discovered. And he's titled his talk, The Climate Crisis is Upon Us, How Then Shall We Live? And I've heard Dar speak about this. I've read his book. He's very, because his experiences and his are so heartfelt and his love of nature runs so deep, that it's a very powerful thing to hear him talk about what he's discovered in his work. We also are going to be joined in a talk by H. Patricia Hines. Patricia Hines is a director of the Trap Rock Peace Center in Massachusetts. She also is a professor at Boston University of Public Health for a good number of years. And she has she's an activist and a writer and a researcher. And she spent a lot of her recent years researching the relationship between the military and climate change. And so she will be addressing that along with other areas of research that she's been thinking and writing about. And she's a great speaker. Women Against War had her recently. Again, her work, her research, her writing comes from a passionate concern for each of us, I guess, as a species and as a for our future. And then also we will do a series of workshops about how to react. And there will be one led by Melissa Tukey on writing as a personal response to the climate crisis. But she'll be joined by Karen Malpede. Karen Malpede is a very well-known New York City playwright, theater founder, theater director, who has spent her whole career, a number of decades now, writing about issues of social justice and writing about issues of historical importance in terms of their impacts on us as human beings. And that has been her focus both as a playwright and as a collator of other people's work. So she's put together a number of well-received anthologies of plays that deal with the issues of war and peace and violence, and has begun to turn her attention in the last couple of years to the issue of climate change. So she'll be conducting that workshop on writing with Melissa. There'll be a workshop on action, because our other speaker on Saturday is Mark Dunley, who many people know as a local political activist with an incredibly strong track record of working tirelessly for the good of other human beings in our community, both in terms of homelessness and food and health. And he is also a very strong, studied environmentalist, and has, I think, managed with much of his work in the last couple of years to help move the New York State Legislature to where it has gone in terms of addressing, finally, in a dramatic way, the issue of climate change. So Mark will be talking about his perspective on where the political will is to truly confront this moment. It's probably maybe one of the greatest, most important, most significant junctures in the history of our planet. But he also, besides talking about that in a lecture in the afternoon, will also be leading a workshop along with a young teacher, poet, activist from Troy, Megan Mahone. And Megan is very involved with the Extinction Rebellion and other movements of action reaction and to the climate crisis. And along with Mark, she'll be leading a workshop on political activism and the possibilities for people to engage there. So those are our key speakers. Then I just want to mention, and you are incredibly kind to let me keep going, that on Saturday evening, it's always been important for this peace conference to create community, because somehow the only way we're going to ultimately confront the issues that threaten us as human beings, both ourselves and other people around the planet, is by coming together and creating critical mass. And one thing that feeds that is feeling that we really are connected to each other, and that there's joy in that. Even in the face of the hardest things, there's joy in it. So we are ending, as we often do, with a good time, we hope, for all. We are inviting people attending and or people who can't do anything but come to a dinner at Lonzi's on the Lake, which is a really lovely restaurant that is sitting right on the Great Sacandaga Reservoir with a beautiful view of the lake, for a dinner. And at that dinner, we will have music by the beautiful lyricist, singer-songwriter Terry Robin, and the amazing singer-songwriter, teacher of singing, spirit, bringing spirit to singing, Sherry Bauer. And they will be providing music for us and lifting our spirits, I'm sure, in that. They may also be joined by a man named Michael Glick, who's a well-known folk singer from out of the area who's coming to the conference. And Karen Malpede will be speaking about her work as an artist addressing climate change. And she will be joined by her husband, George Bartenyov. And George is a gentleman who has been involved in theater for well over 7 decades in New York City. He's a theater legend. From the time he was a kid on Broadway, he has been on Broadway, off Broadway, in theater, in his own theater company that he founded with Karen Malpete, and also movies, including some pretty major movies. And he's a recognizable face, as well as the ubiquitous Law and Order kind of world where he often appears also. So George is going to be doing a dramatic reading from one of Karen's plays about the climate, and it's a reading which is a celebration of the beauty of Earth and why it is we need to care. So it will be a unique dinner. People I want to encourage people, now that you've allowed me to speak endlessly, to take a look for themselves at KateriPeaceConference.org. That's KateriPeace, conference, one word, .org, which is our website. And it's very explanatory about every aspect of the conference, and it also allows you to sign up for dinner. And there's a number of choices. It's a banquet style event in a beautiful room with a view of the lake. So it will be a wonderful evening in the midst of a very difficult conversation about a really overwhelming subject, that of climate disruption, that kind of is not to be, we can no longer ignore it. So that is kind of the outline for the event. I wanted to mention that there is a fee schedule for the different events. You can sign up for one day, you can sign up for 2 days, you can sign up for both days and come to the dinner. You can just come to the dinner. But definitely need to make reservations for the dinner. And even though there's a fee schedule that kind of breaks all of that down, no one should not come because they don't feel at the moment they can pay. Other than the dinner, which we have to cover the cost for, people can come and say, I'm here as a guest of Maureen, and that will be fine. So I encourage people to join us. It's a lovely setting. So far, the forecast looks good for the weekend. It's a great time to talk with people about the things that are troubling us, I think, as a nation. It's a great way to make connection. It's a great way to get new ideas. It's a great way to feed your spirit. So, Cynthia, thank you for letting me just go on and on, because, okay, as you can tell, I'm excited about the Kateri Peace Conference and eager to know that lots of people went to KateriPeaceConference.org in order to check out where they want to be on Friday and Saturday.
I do have a couple of questions now.
Good. Thank you.
I've heard Mark Dunley speak, and he's very dire in his predictions about, you know, if we don't change our ways within the next 50 to 60 years, we will be extinct. And that's pretty frightening. But what you said is that the military is the largest polluter or, you know, environmental changer in this country. Now, I remember seeing a T-shirt. I forgot where I got it, but every single congressional district has something with military in it, and in some places, it props up the economy of that congressional district. So when there's so much reliance on jobs related to the military, and you're saying the military is the biggest consumer of fossil fuels, how do you change that?
Well, one thing I want to say is I would suggest to your readers that they look up the work of William Hartung, Hartung, as well as Cost of War Project, at Brown University, and the National Priorities Project. Those are three separate entities people could look at. And if I was to talk about, for example, William Hartung, he's devoted his life as a researcher to this issue. And one of the things his research, and it's collaborated by, for example, Cost of War Project, which is a collaboration of a number of researchers who are looking at these issues, it's a fallacy. There may be jobs right now created, but they are not the most productive economically jobs. And in fact, if there was a movement away from the militarization that is so ingrained into our economy, because the people who make money from waging war have managed to become totally integrated into Congress as lobbyists, it's not mm-hmm. because, in truth, things are better for people if, in fact, we have spread out all of this weapons-making, war-making, industrial complex around the country. It's because congressional people are sold a bill of goods by people who work for or stand to make money out of this vision that this is best for the economy. William Hartung's research has indicated over and over and over again that more jobs, better jobs, more lucrative jobs, more effective for the general economy jobs would be made in a transformation of a war economy to a different kind of economy. So it's a fallacy. I mean, it looks as if that it's impossible, but the other side of what your question is, if you, for example, there was an article in the Times Union yesterday, an op-ed piece by a man who lives in Fort Ticonderoga, about, you know, that addresses this. And John Amidon, who's my co-coordinator for this conference, has a letter to the editor in the Daily Gazette this past week that points to the military is saying not 50 or 60 years, sooner than that, 15 years, 20 years.
What?
Very, very soon. We will, and Dar Jamal, and this is why we need a day of reflection when we're listening to what he has to say, says he feels that we've already gone over the cliff. He was at the Sanctuary for Independent Media a few months ago, and you could hear literally, I don't think I've ever experienced that, a kind of universal quiet intake of breath. But he feels like there's so much heat, for example, is baked into the oceans. So much that even if we, and there are other researchers saying this, even if we stop, you know, using fossil fuels the way we are, there is dramatic change ahead because we've already so impacted the planet. So that's hard to hear, but the direness you hear in what Mark has to say is being repeated by the military, and they probably are doing the greatest amount of research on that because what they're predicting is that wars are coming as a result of climate change. That resource degradation and the migration that's going to be caused and the disruption. I mean, the forecast, for example, for the East Coast. I mean, ultimately, we have a president who's, you know, pretends that he believes, I don't know what he believes that, but that climate change isn't real. But in the meantime, all the major cities on the East Coast are desperately trying to figure out how to get the money and the resources to do the mitigation that they have to do now or yesterday in order to prevent what is inevitably going to be flooding, coastal flooding, that will make those cities impossible to function the way they are now without a drastic change. For example, in Miami, they have what they call rainy day flooding now. It floods. It just floods all the time. It's flooding. It's flooding. The water's coming in. The sewage backs up all over because, you know, they have no room. I mean, the impact is there. It's happening, and the military is looking at it and studying it. They're working on mitigation on their bases, but they're also saying this is going to be huge in its impact on the planet globally. So, I mean, if you want a sense of how dire it is, just read the military on the issue of climate change. They know it.
Yeah.
So it is dire. It's horrible. It's awful to think about. And that's why, you know, we're hoping to come together in a way that allows us to create some community and spiritual resilience, I guess, for lack of a better word, around these questions so that we can face this reality in a way that doesn't drive us all crazy or to despair.
Right. So maybe we'll have a conversation after the event. I think I will be going on Saturday, and I look forward to seeing you. And
I hope you do, and I look forward to seeing you too, Cynthia.
I hope everybody can come and understand just how dire we as a people, not only people, animals, but the planet, how fragile it is, and we all have to take little steps to make it a little bit better. So
yes,
this is Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Maureen, I'll see you over the weekend, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you, Cynthia.